Live and local
from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
We are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't
stenciled on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Well, Singletary defense is going to be...
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parts III, your host of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, home of your LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live this morning from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111. We've got a jam-packed Monday show for you, as always. He typically only joins us to talk New Orleans Saints, but our good friend from the Saints Happy Hour podcast, Andrew Juge, has agreed to come back on the show to talk some New Orleans Pelicans, giving us a perspective of the fan down there in the Big Easy about what's all going on with the Pels, with the Anthony Davis no-trade situation, and whatnot. So he's going to join us at 9:32. At 10:32, we're going to be welcoming on, as we do every week, from Tiger Details, Jarrett Rozier. He's going to talk a little LSU men's basketball. They had another exciting win over SEC West rival Auburn inside the PMAC on Saturday. So he's going to help us break down that, plus give us a preview of the Tigers' huge road trip this week to Lexington, Kentucky, to face the Wildcats and John Calipari. So that'll be coming up at 10:32. Plus, we'll have Louisiana wrap-up. We'll touch on some Saints news as well. But we're going to start things off with football. And you just thought the NFL season has come and gone. It's in the books. And we got to wait. The only football that we could digest was going to have to be what we like to call the Underwear Olympics, a.k.a. the NFL Combine. That's held every year in Indianapolis. But the universe, God, whoever, has blessed us with some actual legitimate spring football. And there's a lot of questions and a lot of people hating and a lot of people bashing on the AAF. It's tough to say. First of all, it doesn't just roll off the tongue.
Figured out the Alliance is what a lot of people are going with.
Yes,
the Alliance,
which is cool, right? That's
cooler.
It's cooler. I like the Alliance.
Sounds like an evil corporation of some sort, though, like the bad guy in a Pokemon game. We must defend the Alliance.
Oh, the final week before Cody gets married, we start off with a Pokemon reference in the first segment of the first hour of the first day of the show.
Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning to you, Mr. Schutz. But the AAF had its debut this weekend, and it was actually pretty good football, all things considered. They only have 8 teams, so it gives you an opportunity. You're not overwhelmed with the amount of teams. Okay, and some of the names, admittedly, are a little goofy, right? But some of them are cool, like the Arizona Hotshots. That's a cool name. Okay. Hotshots, obviously talking about the hotshot firefighters that go out there and take care of wildfires. So Arizona Hotshots, that's a cool name. The Birmingham Iron. Well, that's a good name. Birmingham Iron. That's who we heard the clip from. Former University of Alabama star running back and first round draft pick and noted in many circles draft bust, Trent Richardson, scored not one but 2 touchdowns as the running back for the Birmingham Iron in their victory, their shutout win over my Memphis Express. That's right. I've already hitched my wagon to the Memphis Express. Mike Singletary, I was like, he's the coach of the Memphis Express. That's the closest team to us here in South Louisiana. I'm rolling with the Express, baby.
How'd that work out?
Yeah, it worked out. They got shut out.
Zach Medenberger, who knew the third string quarterback? Who saw that?
What
coming?
The hell?
Yeah, who saw that?
What the hell, man? Did
really
you
mad.
See? There are people. What? That's what I love. People started tweeting out. You know that people are paying attention to the league and that they're kind of digging it when people are already tweeting out about Christian Haddenberg.
Right, bench him.
Bench him and put in Medenberger. Okay, so you know. For a football league that supposedly no one gives a damn about,
right.
I sure did see a lot of chatter on social media, not to mention that its ratings. Its ratings we'll get to in a minute, which were kind of stunning.
Well, we asked on Sports Chat, put a poll out, did you watch the Alliance this weekend?
I did.
And there's something like 80-something percent are coming through saying yes, they watched at least a little bit of it over the weekend. So, I mean,
I watched it at work.
The return, early return is that, this was very much viewed.
Very much viewed. They got only 8 teams. So the Arizona Hotshots, great name. Atlanta Legends.
Meh.
Eh. Birmingham Iron, that's great that's because cool. of that area. Memphis Express, I love because that's home of FedEx. That's where you get the Memphis Express. So every one of them tried to do something like Hotshots, the Hotshot Firefighters in Arizona.
Kind of like what the Pelicans did when they were trying to pick a new franchise name.
Right. You do something that's regionally... Birmingham Iron. I don't know the reason for Atlanta Legends. I haven't done the research, admittedly, to that.
Lil John is from Atlanta. He is a legend. So we're going to say
that's what we're going to
That's why they
Memphis Express or Orlando Apollos, obviously the space program on that.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so
can't think of the actual name of where they launched the rockets, but.
Yeah, oh, there.
Clear something in Florida, but yes. South Florida.
So Orlando Apollos, Salt Lake Stallions.
Horses, that makes sense. I like that.
San Antonio Commanders and the San Diego Fleet. So, look, some of the names are goofy. A lot of the players you're not going to know when you watch them. The majority of them played at least college ball, were scout team players in the NFL, maybe special teamers. Some of them were actually stars. Some guys actually played in the league. But I watched Saturday night. And that was the Apollos, that was the Atlanta versus Orlando game. In the rain, Garrett Gilbert, former University of Texas quarterback, often maligned quarterback.
I remember, didn't he follow McCoy? Yeah. And that was his struggle.
That was his struggle.
Right.
Yeah, follow the legend. That never
works
out well.
Right, who followed the other McCoy, who was also like a legend.
But the football was actually pretty, Cody, I compared it to watching college football.
I'm down.
It wasn't watching like Alabama Clemson play football or LSU play, but it was like
it was a solid Pac-12 after dark game.
There you go. Well, I was going to say Sun Belt or MAC. There's a couple things that you can't do that I found amusing, like the soft flag because you can't blitz.
It's a 30-yard penalty.
And you can't rush more than 5. I was like, what?
Well, they blitzed, they got a 16-yard completion on the play, and then a 15-yard penalty tacked on at the end of that, I heard. So that's a 31-yard penalty there, so to speak.
Yes.
Because it's not as if football has never defended the blitz before. So it's like, whoa, this new concept, we can't, like, no. There is very easy ways to defend a blitz, get a positive play out of it, and then you still get 15 yards. That is a little silly.
Here's a couple of differences, and they're in – than what you're than what you typically watch for the NFL. Okay? No kickoffs. So the AAF has no kickoffs. They also kick no extra points. Now they kick field goals, but no extra points. So you got to go with the 2-point conversion, which I actually like. I like any opportunity to get more points. I am down for. Okay? So you can't blitz. They do that to protect the quarterback. No kickoffs, only 2-point conversions. And the thing that I loved more than anything is that they have the technology and the refs. They actually went into they let you go into the booth, Cody. They reviewed a play, whether or not it was in the Orlando-Atlanta game. and they actually had the official mic'd up. And they have the officials, and they have cameras set up to review plays automatically. So the new league, so this lady, the head of the officials, is going through it. She's talking through it. She's getting all angled. You can hear her talking out loud. Okay, well, that looks like he used the ground for a catch. Oh, hold on. And they go back to her, and they're like, well, nope. It looks like his elbow was down, so that's going to be a catch before. And she, you actually listen to her go through her process on what made it a catch or not, and she ruled it. And they did it like that, Cody. There wasn't, oh, we can't make a call. We don't have the technology. The new football league that just started has better technology to help their officials and has better officiating than the NFL. And I was like, that's something the NFL should steal. That's what I was doing during Saturday's broadcast. I was like, that's something they should steal. Because, you know, the NFL stole from the XFL. So why can't they do it again? So, yes, I watched. I was one of the millions of people that watched the AAF. But I'm not the only one. We're going to go out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and bring on our friend Ralph. Ralph, good morning to you, brother. How are you this morning?
Hey, Raymond, doing well. Got a chance to watch bits and pieces, not as much as I would have liked, but I definitely plan on watching the product, and I'd love to see it expand, and who knows, you know. With the apathy for the Pelicans in New Orleans, I think you'd have a better chance of having a spring football league here that would succeed. You know, I'm serious, man. I mean, the Voodoo actually drew pretty well in Arena League, you know, for a number of years. But what I was wondering, well, first of all, I did a quick Wikipedia search while I was on hold, and the amount of legends are named for the legendary figures the city has produced, such as Martin Luther King Jr., Hank Aaron, and, you know, et cetera,
okay,
et cetera.
Okay.
And by the way, Cape Canaveral is the town that Cody was trying to think of, I believe.
Thank you, Ralph. I need to brush up on my Men in Black 3. That's my problem.
But number one, I love the mic'd up refs. In fact, that's what they ought to do, is just make refing up all, I mean, mic'ing up all the refs refing up. That's going back to the New Orleans game. That was refed up, man. They ought to mic up all the referees so you could hear, you know, what, when they get in little conferences, what they're discussing. I would have loved to have heard what the guy was telling the other guy when he was waving him off in the Saints game. But with this league, I was just wondering if you think that maybe as it develops, they might go to what the European League, when it existed, did, and allow NFL franchises to designate a certain number of players. You know, since it is a developmental league, I saw like a number of former Saints players, but, you know, like a Sterling Moore, he's at the end of his career. But, you know, guys on your practice squad that maybe you could get them some actual game experience. I know they did that in NFL Europe, and I was just wondering if you thought that might be a good idea in the future. I'll hang up and listen, bro. Thanks.
Thank you, Ralph. I actually agree with Ralph's point. I think that's an excellent point, because I find it interesting that the NFL signed off on having some of these games broadcast on the NFL Network, okay? And there was no hesitation. There was no pushback by the NFL with this. And if you look at the rosters, you're looking at guys like Ralph talked about. These are guys that a lot of them were practice squad players, Cody. And, you know, these a lot of them were not stars. So if you're the NFL and you have this product that's going to last a few months in the spring, in markets where you do not have, for the most part, an NFL franchise. If you look at those teams, Salt Lake City, right, Birmingham, Memphis, Orlando, these are not NFL franchise cities. So you can have your product, professional football, broadcast in those markets, and you can use it as a feeder thing. The American Alliance of Football, or as we're just going to refer to it, the Alliance, can be a feeder. It can be the minor leagues for the NFL, like the G League is for the NBA, like Minor League Baseball already has its infrastructure set up. Hockey does as well. The NFL does not. And instead of it being a league where guys are cast-offs, like the Arena Football League was for a long time, where guys were in the league for a little while and then, you know, kind of found themselves on the outside looking in on rosters, why not have this be your additional players, have this be guys that you're signing those future contracts. That happens a lot these days. Why not have that? And here's the thing. Look, the eight-team league, players are receiving three-year non-guaranteed contracts for only $250,000. So they're setting it up in a way to make it successful. And there could be expansion on the horizon. But it had a great CBS on Saturday night drew 2.9 million fans. That beat a few of the NBA games. The new football league beat out the NBA. Now,
that just shows the dominance football has in this country. My goodness.
Now, will those ratings keep up? Well, look, right. The XFL came out with really good ratings when it first debuted, and then it tanked because the product wasn't good. Okay. But from what I can see from the couple of days of watching the AAF is the product's pretty good. And we love football so much that we're willing to give it the opportunity. Plus, before we head out, if it's not because the fact they're allowing the defenders to hit the quarterbacks and not throwing flags, if you like the new officiating style with the camera angles and them being mic'd up, or if you like them being in the markets, or you like the team names or whatever it may be, let's say you don't like any of those things and you have no interest, you have one great reason to watch the Alliance, and it's the old ball coach.
Into the RPI, see, right very over. Similar
see,
pass route
Roger
concepts.
Lee. Tell him to catch it this time.
Tell him to catch it this time.
Didn't come out wearing the visor. Was there a reason for that?
Well, it rain was predicted.
Okay.
I wear a hat when it rains, but it did not rain. And that dang hat, every time I put my headset on and off, it clipped it over. So I'll get the visor, even if it's a threat of rain the next time.
Steve Spurrier, the man is an absolute treasure, and football is always better with him in it. Tell him to catch it this time. Tell him to catch it. Dang visor.
It's literally, is it Gene Hackman that plays the head coach in The Replacements? And he's like, he puts the stick on, he's like, now go out there and catch the damn ball for a change. It's literally what just happened there.
Just listening to Spurrier mic'd up during that brawl. I was watching it live.
And it's even better, isn't he? He's talking into like a walkie-talkie.
He's got,
type thing
he's
at
got the
time.
Headset and a walkie-talkie.
Yeah, I don't understand why he needs the walkie-talkie, but
dude,
he looks amazing.
You get the old ball coach, you get Mike Singletary, you got Mike Martz. So you have reasons to watch this during the offseason, trust me. So, hey, Memphis Express, that's my Alliance.
I got to pick a team.
Hey, man, they got all the LSU guys on there for
they
you.
Do, but they're apparently that team is very bad.
And they're not
bad.
Playing.
Apparently that team is very bad.
They're filled with LSU players, but they don't play. When we come back here on Rap Game with RP3, we're going to dive into the awkward reunion for the New Orleans Pelicans and Anthony Davis right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers.
Boo! Yay!
And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. That audio clip was Anthony Davis's glorious return to playing for the New Orleans Pelicans. It was plenty of boos while he was welcomed in during introductions. Booze, 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 booze. And then they started cheering, 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 cheering when he helped them defeat the Minnesota Timberwolves on Friday night, 122-117. He finished with 32 points and didn't even play in the fourth quarter. The list of games that Anthony Davis, the Brow, has had 30-plus points in 25 minutes or less was Friday night. And that is it. He had 32 points, 9 rebounds, and 25 minutes to start the game. He sat the rest of the way. The highest percentage of shots AD has ever made in a game, he's had 30 points, is 85.7 when he was 12 of 14 for 30 points against Detroit last January. At one point in Friday's game, AD was 10 of 11 from the field and 10 of 11 from the free throw line. It was tremendous. They got the dub. They fell, though, over the weekend to the Grizzlies. So even with Anthony Davis back in the fold, they won a game on Friday night where he helped them get the dub, even though he sat the fourth quarter. And then he was out there again over the weekend, and they lost. There's been lots of talk about what to do with AD. Did the NBA step in? Did Adam Silver pick up the bat phone and call Dell Demps and said, "Hey, bruh, it's cute what you're doing down there in New Orleans, but if you think for a minute that we're going to allow you to bench a top five player in this league, one of the faces of the league, of our brand, of a global brand, a billion-dollar industry, that's not going to happen." And that's exactly what that – we talked about this last week, Cody, on the show, when it was announced and they did the dump. Demps did the dump statement at like 8:10 on Thursday night that, "Oh, Anthony Davis, we're all about protecting the integrity of the game."
Right, the NBA went all Don Corleone on it. It's family first, always family first.
Yes, like, no, that's not what happened. But it does, it is interesting to see how this works moving forward. You're going to have a little bit of a break here coming up because of All-Star Weekend, which Anthony Davis is going to be part of. And he did look awesome in those Mardi Gras unis. Those Mardi Gras unis for the Pels are awesome. If I had just like laying around money, I'd get me one of those. Even though I'm 40 now and you're not supposed to be wearing jerseys anymore.
Who has laying around money? What is that?
Kardashian money? I don't know.
Right.
There it is. But I don't know. Look. As a basketball fan, I'm thrilled to see AD back on out there on the court. I know Alvin Gentry is happy to have him out there. His teammates are happy to have him out there. And they're going to compete with AD out on the court, though. You're going to play yourself out of a lottery pick. So, yeah, that's not going to be good. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this with our friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on Rap Game with RB3 on 103.
So it was definitely awkward. I go, "Boo, okay." But yeah, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going out there and play basketball. So
you were surprised by that reaction?
I was, but hey, it's life, man. Some people are not going to like it.
Some people aren't going to like you. The words of Anthony Davis, which, come on, bro. Like the reporter gives you a softball question and goes, "Were you surprised that you got booed?" And it's like, "Yeah, I was surprised. You know, people ain't going to like you." Dude, you requested a trade. You requested a trade and you wanted to go to one of the glamour franchises in the NBA. Of course people are going to be pissed off, man, just because you're back out there. Like, there's a lot of blame to go around for this Pelican situation. I'm not, as we know, it's been well documented on. Yeah, it's been well documented on the Rap Game that I am not a fan of Dell Demps. But AD has not done things the right way either here. So there's a lot of blame to go around, and we're going to dive into it as we welcome on to the Rap Game with RP3, our good friend from the Saints Happy Hour podcast, Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you this morning, brother?
Doing well, yeah. It's been a very weird and interesting period in Pelicans land, so I'm excited to kind of deviate from the path a little bit and talk about something a little different with you.
Yeah, it's interesting to say the least. So he does not get traded. The big fella does not get traded, and which is not surprising. You and I kind of tweeted back and forth over the weekend. You know, for me, the Lakers trade offer is exactly what I thought it would be, because if you're the Lakers, you are definitely going to try your best to, you know, trade in. You know, it's like going to the car lot and you got a 1978 Pinto station wagon and you're trying to flip it to get a Jaguar. The salesman's going to look at you like you're ate up with, you know, like you've been huffing paint thinner. But you got to try. And that's what Magic Johnson tried to do. He tried to give the Pels garbage and get Anthony Davis in return. And it didn't work. And it failed. It failed miserably. And I'll give it up to Dell Demps from holding firm. In that deal, I do like Kuzma. I think he's a good player. I don't know. He's not a franchise player. But he's a good player and maybe some picks. But at the end of the day, the Pels think they're going to get more. Here's my question, my first question to you, Andrew. I personally don't think they're going to get, they're not going to get equal value for Anthony Davis. He's a top five player. And this notion that they're going to get Jason Tatum from the Boston Celtics and that Danny Ainge is going to just, you know, toss him up with no hesitation, I don't buy that either. In your opinion, is there any way that the Pels can get equal value or even close to equal value for Anthony Davis?
Absolutely not. No, you said it best. You know, he's a top five player. I think the only real hope that you have is that you can acquire enough first round picks that, you know, maybe you hit the lottery or maybe you just hit on a draft pick that ends up being a superstar player. You know, there's a reason he was picked first overall. That, you know, the Pelicans were fortunate enough to have that pick. You know, he really feels like a player that comes along maybe once every five draft classes. You know, he is that special. So, you know, you can hopefully get a number of players, and hopefully those players combined give you a little bit more depth and maybe allow the Pelicans to be competitive in a different way. But listen, the reality is, with the Pelicans, you know, I exclude last season, which was a pretty special season. And if you take away the Golden State Warriors, who clearly are maybe the best team of all time, given the talent that they have, the Pelicans had a really strong team last year and had a great run, and it was a lot of fun. But if you take that season away, Anthony Davis has not been as good as he is as a top five player. He has not been good enough on his own to propel this weak roster. And so if you get rid of him and you're able to package and get a number of assets in return, I still think the Pelicans are capable of putting together seasons that are similar to what they had with Davis without him. So, you know, obviously you want to see them get some assets here. But the main thing for me is, unless the Lakers were going to give you something that was just so breathtaking that you could not, you simply could not say no, you cannot make this deal right now. And the main reason why I say that is I don't know if Gentry is going to be around next year, and I don't know if Dell Demps is. And if Mickey Loomis and Dale Benson and the thinking here is we're going to be firing these two people in the offseason, or we're going to be firing one of the two, you need to know what your coaching plan is, and you need to know what your GM, what his vision is to build this team. And you can't trade your best asset until you know what the vision is. And so if Demps is on the way out and Gentry's on the way out, you have to allow whoever's coming in next to be the man to orchestrate, man or woman, to orchestrate this deal. So as far as I'm concerned, this was a no-go from the get-go. I do not want Dell Demps doing this deal unless the Pelicans are committing to having him around for the future.
We're on with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast, giving us some insight from the Big Easy on the New Orleans Pelicans, Anthony Davis drama. I agree totally with you on those points, Andrew. And here's the other thing about AD. As great as he is, perennial MVP candidate, right? We always talk about him being a top five player. And I will admit that the Pels have done a mediocre job building around him in the last 7 years. That said, LeBron took a team by himself to the NBA Finals. Dwight Howard took a team to the NBA Finals, okay, with not a lot of supporting. I mean, the best player on that Magic team with Dwight Howard was what, J.J. Redick? So there's been other guys that have been able to do this and lead their teams to postseason success. He has not, okay? And I've always contended, as much as I like his game and as much as I like him as a player, he played his best basketball last year when Rajon Rondo got inserted into the starting lineup and pushed him. And he even talked about it in the media, remember, where he talked about Rondo's leadership and how Rondo pushed those guys. AD needs a guy, another. AD's not the alpha. He has the alpha body. He's not the alpha. And he needs a guy to push him, and they don't have that on that team. And you saw him play his best basketball last year after Boogie got hurt and Rondo got inserted into the starting lineup, and they made that run to get into the postseason. But you talked about, and we talked about it, and he even admitted to the media how much of a leadership Rondo provided and how Rondo became the alpha of that locker room. If you're building your franchise around a player, is that not a problem to have him not be the alpha dog in the room?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's worked on that over the years. I don't think that's ever come naturally to him. You know, he's not the most outspoken guy. You know, he's not a guy that speaks very, very eloquently and very comfortably. You know, he's a quiet guy. You know, he works very, very hard, and I think he does lead by example. But Anthony Davis is not this overwhelming, like you said, alpha dog personality. You know, and I think his natural inclination is to show up, work hard, and kind of lead by example and kind of go about his business quietly. And, you know, he's been maybe forced to show a little bit more personality than he maybe has because of the situation on the Pelicans. But I've always felt like Anthony Davis really needed a facilitator to be successful. And if there's one thing that's been clear to me during his time with the Pelicans, really with the exception of Rajon Rondo, he has never really had a facilitator point guard to set him up. And it's not that he can't create his own shot, and it's not that he can't score on his own. But I think when you bring in a player that can create off the dribble, that draws a double team, that breaks down a defense, and allows Anthony Davis to get a lot of easy buckets, and we saw that with Rondo, you start to see just how good he can be. And I do think that made a difference. And Drew Holiday, frankly, he's just not that player. I mean, great defender. You know, I think he's got a lot of skills to his offense, but he's not really a playmaking facilitator like Rondo was. So, you know, I think, now listen, your example about Dwight Howard, I think Anthony Davis, if the Pelicans are in the Eastern Conference, Anthony Davis is probably signing an extension this summer. And, you know, I think this team would have had a lot more success if they weren't in the competitive heavy balance that exists in the Western Conference.
That's fair. Yeah.
But being what the Western Conference is, you have to be healthy. You have to have depth. You have to have strong lines because the teams are just too good over there. And like you said, you know, LeBron, he may be good enough to bring a team to the finals on his own, but what we're seeing right now is when he moves over to the Western Conference, he's not good enough to do it on his own. And if you're going to play in that conference, you really do have to have three superstars on your team and good depth to be competitive. And, you know, the reality is I think a lot of this comes down to injuries. The Pelicans have been really unfortunate throughout Anthony Davis's tenure where they haven't really had the opportunity to really see these teams as constructed and what they're capable of. But the bottom line is injuries are not. Demps is responsible for assembling these teams, and it just hasn't worked out.
We're on with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. And Andrew, I would agree with you on that. Demps, since they took Anthony Davis number one overall, which was set up based on the season following the Chris Paul trade that did not happen to the Lakers and then did happen to the Clippers. And then they had that terrible season after that, and then they were able to take Anthony Davis number one overall. The Pels have not kept a first-round draft pick since then. I mean, that's amazing. And when you look around the NBA, the best franchises have a combination of guys that they draft and develop and free agents. You look at Golden State. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, first-round draft picks. Draymond Green was a second-round guy. And then they took flyers on guys like Sean Livingston and JaVale McGee and Andrew Bogut and other guys to give themselves depth. And they even got Iggy on the cheap and took him from a starter, an all-star guy, to a bench player. And that was before they got Kevin Durant to come in free agency and made them the Death Star, okay? But they built up through the draft, and then they got good depth with free agency. Boston is trying to do the same thing. You know, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum. Those are all homegrown guys that they drafted. Yes, they brought in Al Horford and Hayward and Kyrie, but that's more of a mixture, and Danny Ainge is more of a free agent guy anyway. But you look at the best teams across the landscape of the NBA, the Philadelphia 76ers are another perfect example. They have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and through the process and everything like that. And then they add a Jimmy Butler, and then they just added another piece from the Clippers. Dill Demps hasn't done that. And that's the thing that I think has to be the most frustrating, is that everyone goes, well, look at the Boogie Cousins trade. And I go, yeah, and they ended up getting nothing for him. And Buddy Hield's out playing in the three-point competition now. If they would have waited on him, maybe he would have developed into one of those wing shooters that they need and they don't have. And I just – that you make the splash with Boogie and the injury, like you talked about, killed them on that. But he hasn't developed any talent around him. It's all been free agent moves. And you look at all the moves that he's made, he ended up getting nothing in return for Boogie after all. That has egg all over his face. He just traded Meritek at the deadline, a guy that he gave up a first-round draft pick for, which obviously it was a low first-round draft pick, but he gave up a first and only ended up getting a second-rounder for a guy who's having a career year in points and rebounds. Oh, and sent him to the best team in the Eastern Conference. I just think that Dell Demps has done an awful job of building around a generational talent like Anthony Davis.
Yeah, it's a fair statement. And I think there are a couple things that maybe don't excuse it, but certainly explain it. You know, I think he takes some gambles that, you know, at face value, they don't look awful, but, man, they better work. You know, and when you look at a guy like Cousins getting injured, obviously that's a game changer for that trade. You know, he looked like he was going to re-sign, and this was going to be Cousins and Davis's thing to do together, and it could have been amazing, but then Cousins gets hurt, and obviously that changes the course. So, you know, that's unfortunate. But, you know, I think one thing that maybe was a mistake in hindsight, but is maybe a circumstance that makes things difficult for Dents, is that the change in ownership was a challenge. And I think for a long time, Dents, because he was with the small market team in New Orleans, and because the team had just moved to New Orleans, because you're competing with the Saints, because it's so difficult in the city to battle attendance and make sure that you're selling seats and getting people there, I think there was maybe a tendency at times to take bigger risks and to make bigger moves to win immediately, and maybe not have an eye towards the future and really trying to build for the long haul. I think maybe Demps at times took too many risks trying to inflate interest and trying to get people in the seats. And so, you know, I think to some degree getting Anthony Davis and trying to go all in and build around him was risky moves. You know, I think it did create some buzz, and it did create some at least immediate excitement when Boogie Cousins was added in the playoff run last year. Certainly that was able to fill some seats. But like you said, I think at the end of the day, that was a short-term game for a long-term failure. And that's what we're seeing now, and unfortunately, that's why Anthony Davis wants to leave.
Andrew, we'll wrap it up with this. Do you believe, and you hinted at it earlier about, you know what they have to have the best option is going to be in the summer, you know, maybe they'll luck up and hope the Knicks get the number one overall pick and through the lottery, and then they can trade Anthony Davis to there because he's already indicated that he'd sign a long-term deal with the Knicks, and they get Zion Williamson in return, and maybe that's your best-case scenario. More than likely what's going to happen is that the Knicks won't get the number one overall pick, and then it will be a team that's not going to give up a guy that they can have under contract for 5 years for a guy that's going to be a one-year rental. So that'll be the bridge that they'll have to cross come summer. In your opinion, do you believe that Gail Benson and Mickey Loomis are going to take a more active approach to how the Pelicans are ran? And if so, do you think Dell Demps is going to have a job this summer?
No, I still think, you know, they'll want to hire a GM. They can have control. I really feel like this was Dell Demps' baby. And I think for the most part, Mickey Loomis allowed him to operate without too much meddling. So I think he'll want to be very involved, of course, in the hire, as will Gail Benson, in making sure they get a GM that they believe in. But then they'll hand over the reins, much like they did with Dent. But I don't know if the Pelicans will get a better deal than what the Lakers offered. In fact, you know, they're playing Davis right now. So first of all, he's going to have to get through the season without any sort of injury, which is a concern on its own. But assuming that he does, you know, then Boston comes into play. You mentioned the Knicks and whatever draft pick they end up having. So maybe there's more interested parties. Maybe that ups the offer a little bit. But again, to me, it's less about whether it's a stronger offer or a lower offer. And it's more about that you want the new GM, if there's going to be one, attached to this trade. You want this to fall on him. What you don't want is Del Demps making a deal that he finds is best for the future of the franchise. He then gets fired, and then someone else comes in and has to inherit this trade. So inherit the what's left of this trade. So, you know, I think that's going to have to be the first move, and I do think ultimately it is the right time to part ways with Del Demps, but we'll see what the Pelicans do. Certainly it's going to make for a very interesting offseason.
Andrew, appreciate you coming on as always, brother. We'll be in touch. Have a terrific week, my friend.
Same to you. Thanks for having me.
Andrew Juge, Saints Happy Hour podcast, coming on, breaking down some pills for us here on Rap Game with RP3. When we return, we'll wrap up the first hour of Rap Game right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. A little Saints news for us to get to before we wrap up the first hour here. Alex Okafor, defensive end, productive player for the Saints the last two seasons. He's going to be opting out of his contract, a source says. Nick Underhill reported this for the New Orleans Advocate. He's going to become a free agent. The Saints defensive end triggered a clause in his contract last month that provided him with the option of opting out of the final year of his contract in exchange for recording three sacks this season. So he's going to get his bonus, and he is going to bounce, which means that Okafor is going to take the production he's had the last 2 years, get himself a bigger deal. The Saints can't re-sign him. They don't have the money for that. But what that means, though, is Marcus Davenport's going to be the full-time starter in 2019 after recovering from that turf toe injury that he had to have surgery on. So Alex Okafor era in New Orleans is over, but Marcus Davenport's is just beginning. Hour 2, Rap Game with RP3, coming up right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it? Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Out to Reed. Step back three. He'll give a head fake instead. Now over to Taylor. Waters will try the three. Bullseye. Right corner. Tigers on top. 45-43.
Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers, on the call from Saturday's 83-78 win for the LSU Tigers over the Auburn Tigers inside the PMAC. An interesting week for LSU. They had two tougher than, well, not expected. We anticipated them being quality games. They had to go on the road and defeat a very good Mississippi State team, 92-88 on Wednesday. And then on Saturday, they had to take care of Auburn. It doesn't get any easier because them Tigers have to go on the road to Lexington, Big Blue Country, and take on Mighty Kentucky and John Calipari tomorrow night. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game, pregame 5:30, tip at 6. That's going to be tomorrow, Tuesday, right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers.
Need to channel that inner Jarrell Martin, Jordan Mickey team that went on the road to Kentucky and got a win. Last second win, I remember it was like a block or something in the winding down seconds there from Anthony from Jordan Mickey, I believe that won the game if I remember correctly. But man, if LSU can get a win over a team that is projected in the top 16 seeds of the Big Dance right now, you're talking about a quadrant one win. Eat your heart out. That is gigantically huge, enormous.
Will Wade's group of young men have every opportunity in front of them to play themselves into being a top three or top four seed in the NCAA tournament. It's all in front of them. Starting right up is going to be Kentucky, like you talked about, tomorrow night.
Can we use that cliche, their destiny is in their own hands?
The SEC is a good league this year, a very good league. You have two teams in the top five from the conference. If LSU goes on the road and beats Kentucky in Lexington, that's a terrific win. And then they can help build that momentum because, by the way, Saturday the 23rd, a week from this coming Saturday, the number one team in the country comes to the PMAC, okay, in Tennessee, the Volunteers.
And, before that, you've got...
Who are, by the way, a legit national championship contender.
Oh, that's without a doubt. They're not just the best in the conference. They're deservingly getting that best,
right.
Number one ranking.
It's them and Duke who may be the two best teams in the country. So
it'll take an upset for that not to be the finals, right? More or less.
Yeah.
But you can't overlook even between, LSU's got Kentucky tomorrow, the Georgia game on the Saturday. LSU should be able to handle that on the road. You would think it's a road game, but they should be able to win that.
The Fighting Ben Loves are not very good this year.
Right. But then at home on the Wednesday before Tennessee comes in, Florida, who is down this year, admittedly, I understand that.
But they're a competitive bunch.
They are a school in the SEC when basketball rolls around that every time you play the Florida Gators, you have to bring it or they will beat you, regardless of how their season's gone.
I agree with that. And they're a well-coached team, and they're going to give effort. And my biggest concern for LSU, I have two concerns right now at this point for the Tigers. I think they're well coached. I think they're balanced, which is a good thing. Look at Saturday's game. Naz Reid chipped in 13 and 10. Good game from him. I'd like to see him score more. That's just me. That's not a concern. That's just a preference. I'd like to see Naz Reid, like he did in Mississippi State, he had a huge game. I'm waiting for him to take over games, Cody. He's not quite there yet. We've talked about this on the show immensely, is the big fellas take a little bit longer to learn how to take over games. They learn how to play inside their own body and dominate. He should be dominating the competition, okay? So there's no reason why Naz Reid shouldn't be averaging 22 points a game.
It did feel like in the Auburn game, in the second half especially, he did sort of dominate the boards. The rebound game was kind of Naz Reid's home against Auburn. Now, offensively, was he where you wanted?
No.
Not even really close. But I did feel like maybe the rebounds there for Naz
Reid, rebounding,
especially on the offensive end.
His rebounding is getting better as the season's progressing, which you like to see. But and that's just a little quirk. I'd like to see Naz Reid dominate more offensively. But look at Saturday's game. Naz had the double-double. Big B Williams had you 7 points, 11 rebounds. He does all the dirty work. He's not going to get a ton of points.
He had a big slam, though, a putback slam in the second half. It was always nice.
Skylar Mays, 20 points. He led LSU in scoring with 20 points. Tremont Waters, 19 points, 10 assists, 3 rebounds, 36 minutes. He's your leader of your team. This is what you expect from him.
And I'd like to see how many steals he had, because he seemed like every time he turned around, every other possession, he was nabbing a steal from Auburn.
My two concerns. One, what the hell's happened to Javonte Smart? Because they're going to need Javonte to have the confidence back. He seemingly has lost his mojo when he's out on the court. He only had 3 points. He played 27 minutes and only had 3 points. Okay. You need that cat to be able to step up and make big shots. He doesn't have to score 20, but you need Javonte to at least be in double figures. And you need him to have confidence, and it doesn't seem like he's playing with a lot of confidence right now. So that's a concern. But my bigger concern is they give up a ton of three-pointers on defense. A ton. They did it against Missouri, and they had to rally to beat them. They did it against Arkansas the second time and lost that game, and they couldn't overcome that early deficit. Auburn raced out to that lead, right, Cody, on Saturday, and you're like, oh,
it was a 20-1 run.
I love the fact that they have the grit to be able to overcome early mistakes, and they have heart to be able to battle back. You love that. They're getting the reputation of being the cardiac cats, right, which is what you say about anyone that wins a bunch of close games, that their mascot is a cat of
any
kind.
Tiger, lion,
right.
Wildcat, cougar, right. Panther, you get it.
Right. Tabby cat, whatever it may be. And they're able to do that. Once I said, all the positives, they have balance when it comes offensively. They have depth. They have a good coach in Will Wade. They're able to overcome early mistakes, and they're able to overcome poor performance early on in games. But here's the thing. Auburn buried 11 shots from beyond the three-point arc in the first half. 11 three-pointers. Now, LSU did a better job of defending it in the second half. But for a team that's won 12 of his past 13 games, they got Kentucky coming up. They got Tennessee coming up. You cannot allow the other team to shoot double-digit three-pointers on you in a first half against the best teams in the conference. And that's my biggest concern, is the defense when it comes to defending the three-pointer. They struggle with it. Will Wade's talked about their transition defense being a work in progress. And teams are lighting them up when it comes to the three ball. And I'm a little concerned, because that's the thing in the tournament. We've always seen in the NCAA tournament, year after year, Cody, is if a team can shoot the ball and shoot the ball well from three-point range, I always think of Stephen Curry at Davidson, right? They were able to make that run. Any of those Cinderella teams, they're able to make those runs, they do so because they can shoot the three. And if they get hot, they can take down any team in the tournament. And that's what worries me. I see it in front of me. LSU being upset in the NCAA tournament because they give up too many three-pointers.
You bring in a team that makes threes, that has a coach a la, you know, a Shaka Smart or someone along those lines.
A veteran savvy coach.
And they beat you.
Yeah, and that's my biggest concern. Let's go out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We got Bob on the line. Bob, how are you this morning, my friend?
Good morning, good morning. I listened to Coach Brady the other day, and he nailed it on the head. I mean, LSU's Achilles heel is, defending the three-pointer. But he made a really smart observation. He said that a lot of times it's coming in transition, and a lot of times it's coming within, like, about 8 to 10 seconds of the other team coming across, half court. I mean, they're quick three-pointers, where LSU is, I'm not going to say they're lazy, but they're kind of lackadaisical in picking up, the other team as they come across the half court. And that's part of their problem. It's a problem that's fixable. I mean, it's not something that just the other team is doing, but LSU just has to pick up these guys more at half court. And I think that'll help him in defending the three. But he was right in all three cases. That's what like you said, Arkansas, Missouri and Auburn. And I guarantee you, I mean, they saw it on their scouting reports, and I'm sure other teams will see it too.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate the phone call. Bob makes
thank you.
Bob makes a terrific point in the former head coach of the LSU Tigers, John Brady, who's now on the radio network and who led them to the Final Four with Big Baby Davis and Tyrus Thomas. It's that transition defense has been key. And if you listen to Will Wade throughout the year, he's brought it up all the time. And the thing about it is, and Bob mentioned it, there are times where they do very well in the transition defense, but they're not consistent. If there's one part of LSU's game that's not consistent with the effort, it's the transition defense. And Will Wade knows this, and he's tried to preach about it, and he's told us in the media about it over and over again. I guarantee you, you listen to the Will Wade show on Wednesday right here on 103.7 The Game, transition defense will be a topic that will be brought up, and he will talk about how they need to improve on it. And that is their Achilles heel, just like Bob said that Coach Don Brady said. If they don't fix that, as talented as this team is, as well coached as this team is, as much just natural basketball ability and heart and grit that this team has, from Tremont Waters down to Naz Reid, if they don't improve on transition defense, it's going to be an early tournament run in the SEC tournament, and then it's going to be an even earlier tournament run in the NCAA. Like, that's the type of thing that will get you bounced. Cody, that's the type of thing, that's the type of flaw in the team, in a team that will bust everyone's bracket on the first weekend of the NCAA tournament.
And don't think that the talking heads and experts and bracketologists and all that won't be telling you and telling everyone about that if that does happen. If LSU does not improve their three-point defense and then the big dance gets here, you will see all those Joe Lunardi guys and the others saying, LSU is vulnerable, LSU is vulnerable, the Tigers can be beat.
How are you going to feel if they can't fix this transition defense between now and the tournament and LSU gets the 5 seed?
Well, I mean, that's that
the
line.
Classic
you don't
5-12 matchup.
You don't want that line, period. Whether whether you know you're allowing a lot of threes or not, you want to avoid that line. It's just, I don't know the technical ins and outs of basketball enough. That was the one spot. I didn't play indoor sports growing up. I never realized that till I was older. It's just a thing. I didn't play indoor sports, so I don't know.
You didn't realize that sports were that took place on the inside? You had no idea of this?
No, I mean, I knew they existed. I knew
what
they
is this you're talking about?
Wait, air
a sport held in air conditioning? What is this you speak
of? I never played basketball. Well, I played soccer instead, and in school they went on at the same time, so I played soccer instead of basketball. But it's one of those things, like, I feel like I don't know how you fix it or how you coach better besides tying the kids' feet together, which you can't really do that.
Right.
They leave their feet so much.
And players are so offensive-minded.
I mean, the ball fakes, they bite every single time, it seems, and it's just leaving wide-open threes for guys. You compile that on top of what Bob said, these transition threes where a guy is picking either corner, and he's got no one within 10 feet of him when he's taking his shot. You know, so you have those wide-open threes, and then one simple ball fake gets an LSU defender flying by the guy, and now he's got a wide-open three. I mean, it's
they hustle it's when you watch them play. And look, this is just not an LSU Tiger problem. There's a lot of teams out there in college basketball, and have been for the better part of the last decade, that have problems with transition defense. Okay, it's something that's not being taught, whether it's from the AAU ranks and through high school basketball. If you talk to high school coaches, they'll tell you the same thing, that it's a monumental challenge for them to be able to get kids to buy into playing defense, okay? The kids are more naturally adapt of being excited and amped up for offense. When you watch LSU play, those fast breaks, those fast break dunks, everyone's hauling butt down the court
right.
for those.
Tremont's looking to throw an alley-oop from half court.
But when it comes to the transition defense, they get so excited and amped up about scoring that they don't hustle back in time to play defense. And the teams have figured that out. And the teams have figured out that they're quick enough. And Bob talked about it. It's just like 5 or 6 seconds. It's not that they give up bad three-pointers when their defense is set. That's not what's happening.
Right.
It's when the defense is getting behind them, and then they have an open court, and then they just jack up these threes because there's no one around them. It's an open shot. They're not contested. That's what they have to work on. But there's still plenty of time to do that. There's still plenty of time to kind of lock things down, and they'll have a terrific opportunity so tomorrow night in Lexington, Kentucky. We'll talk more about LSU men's basketball and their game this week, and their game this past weekend, and their game this week when Jarrett Rozier joins us at 10:32. But when we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, it'll be time for some Louisiana wrap-up right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
it is time for the Louisiana Wrap-Up on a Monday edition of the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game, coming at you from the 237 Roof Studios, Delta Media Corp. And let's jump right into it, because we got to go around this boot. We got to do a little Louisiana Wrap-Up, my friend. And Raymond, what do you say we start real close to home, right here in Lafayette at Lamson Park? Tell me about it.
What a start to her Raging Cajun career.
The pronoun game, Raymond.
Oh, the pronoun game?
You said her.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
I just don't know who her is.
Yeah. Her is Kendra Lamb, freshman pitcher.
Freshman.
She had a heck of a start to her Raging Cajun career, helping the Raging Cajuns with the Raging Cajun Classic 4-0. Start to their season. She only did something very mundane. She threw 16, she had 16 strikeouts in two games. Oh, by the way, two no-hitters in 2 days. Like, 2 days, two no-hitters.
Untouchable.
Untouchable, two no-hitters in 2 day span for the true freshman, 16 strikeouts. And, I mean, what else do you want? I mean, that is a terrific start. And she's not even supposed to be the ace. That's the thing. Like, Summer Ellison is the ace of the staff, right? The all-conference pitcher who threw no-hitters last year, okay? The former Turlings Catholic star. And Jerry Glasgow and his staff were able to add Lamb to the mix. And she just comes in and she's like, ain't no big deal. I got this. Oh, I threw one no-hitter. You know what's better than one? Two. Raging Cajuns, by the way, back on the field tonight at Lamson Park for a doubleheader with Cal out of the Pac-12 at 4 and at 6 p.m. out there. But terrific start for Kendra Lamb for her career, starting it off with her first two games being no-hitters.
That is quite impressive. I'm liking the softball talk, Ray, so what do you say we keep that going? Let's travel, though, across the basin, head over to the capital city, Baton Rouge, to Tiger Park. More specifically, what you got?
The LSU softball team is 6-0. They won all six of their games of their season opening home tournament in the Tiger Classic against the likes of Tulsa, Iowa, and Bucknell. They won all six games by mercy rule. They outscored their opponents in the Tiger Classic 73-2. I'll say it again. They scored 73 runs in a six-game span against Tulsa, Iowa, and Bucknell in the Tiger Classic. Shelby Wickersham also threw a no-hitter. Apparently, the state of Louisiana is just chock-filled with college softball pitchers that are throwing no-hitters like it's nobody's business.
Apparently.
This weekend. But Shelby Wickersham threw a no-hitter. But LSU's bats... 73 runs. 73. That is a murderer's row of a lineup. And I know it's early, and it's one of these home tournaments where you're not playing the best competition. I understand that. It's not like they're facing off against A&M or Georgia in SEC play here. But anytime you can start off your season by mercy ruling all six of your opponents to start off the season, and you score 73 runs... you're really good.
Yes.
So, congrats to the LSU Tigers softball team, because that is just filthy.
Let's finish the Louisiana wrap-up now by bringing it back home. We're coming back to Lafayette, but this time we're going to the Cajun Dome. What you got?
Bob Marlin's group, if they needed, they were desperate for a win, Cody. They were desperate for a win. They had slid that road trip to the Carolinas with App State and Coastal, the losses had piled up. They were riding a losing streak, and they needed a win, and they needed it in a big way if they wanted to kind of end the Sun Belt conference play strong. Because, like I said, they'd lost, just the losses had just piled up on them. App State, Coastal Carolina, then they lost to Georgia Southern. And Georgia Southern and Coastal Carolina, App State weren't even close games. But they stepped up Friday night on ESPN2, live on television, nationwide, against Georgia State. And they gutted out a 76-72 win inside the Cajun Dome, a much-needed win to stop the bleeding, so to speak, for this team that has huge aspirations. even with Malik Marchetti being injured right before conference play. They still have Jakinen Gant, who's a candidate for Player of the Year. But they had just struggled, but they pulled out the win. They held off. You know, Georgia State tried to make a game of it in the second half, outscoring the Cajuns actually 42-35. But the Cajuns were able to hold on, get the win. Jakinen Gant had a huge game, 23 points, 5 rebounds. He was 3-for-3 from three-point land. Cedric Russell stepped up, had 14 points. He was 4-of-12 from three-point land. But a much-needed victory for the Raging Cajuns men's basketball team. It's needed. They needed to end the losing streak and try to build some momentum now, because they have to get back to business this week against ULM on Saturday inside the Cajun Dome at 7 p.m. When we come back here on The Wrap Game with RP3, we will welcome on from Tiger Details, Jarrett Rozier, right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. Welcome back to Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111. And that's where we're going to go out to right now as we welcome on our good friend from Tiger Details, the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, man, as you know, scrambling around a little bit, but, you know, just trying to get started on another week here.
Well, look, man, when you're an international man of leisure like yourself, I mean, I'm sure you can handle it, though, right?
I guess. I don't know how much leisure gets involved in this this international man part these days, but yeah, it's I can't complain, man. It's all good.
Brother, let's talk about LSU men's basketball team. Look, I'll give it to them. They know how to give us exciting basketball games. Without a doubt. They're very much living up to the moniker that's being thrown out there of cardiac cats. What are your first impressions from Saturday's game, where they are able to overcome the barrage of three-pointers from Auburn and able to hold on and pull out the win there at the PMAC?
Yeah, I think Saturday I kind of gave up on this idea of they're going to figure it out and they're going to play these complete games. And I'm just starting to expect that it's going to be a roller coaster with this extremely young but extremely talented team. You watch them play about as bad of a stretch of basketball as they've played in a while, or, you know, I guess it's hard to say that because they've been so up and down in so many games recently, where they give up some good looks and Auburn gets hot. And next thing you know, they're giving up, I think it was a 20-1 run for Auburn in the first half, and you're about ready to write them off for the day. And then they turn around and answer with a 20 or 22-5 run. And next thing you know, they stretch their lead out and look like it's their game. And suddenly Auburn's right back in there with a chance to potentially win it again at the end. And so it was a roller coaster Saturday, and I'm starting to think we're going to see that as kind of the norm, as frustrating as that may be for a lot of fans, and even more so for Will Wade. I just think that's kind of it. The more games we have shape up like that, the harder it is to think that they're going to provide much different. And heck, I mean, they're still winning a lot of games. They're still as talented as just about anybody in the country. So as frustrating as that may be for stretches, at the end of the day, they're still an incredibly impressive team overall.
How much does, you know, you talked about playing a complete game. Transition defense has been an issue all season long. Will Wade has talked about it ad nauseum, Jarrett. It's not an execution thing. It just seems at times to be an effort thing. Of all the things that they're so good at and so amped up about doing as a team, transition defense is this thing that seemingly falls through the cracks. Because when they get set defensively, when they have their guys and a team tries to shoot the three-pointer on, they're far better at that. It's just the transition defense, and they're allowing teams to get wide open looks for three-pointers. Is that an effort issue or is that an execution issue, in your opinion?
Yeah, I would agree that it often looks to be an effort issue, and that's, I think that's what frustrates the coaching staff as much as anything, because the defensive side of the ball is something that Will Wade and his staff want to hang their hats on, and they I'm sorry, somebody was just walked up and started talking to me. They don't do a great job of taking care of the part of it that they have control over, which is effort. I mean, you hear from the time you're young playing basketball that you can control the effort on defense, and that's kind of where you start, and the rest kind of comes out of that. And when you don't see that aspect, which is, should be one of the most controllable aspects, then that's going to frustrate a coach who wants to hang his hat on that very thing.
How much of a concern is it, and we were talking about this earlier before we brought you on, Jared, is you see this all the time in conference tournaments and in an NCAA tournament where you see a very talented team lose in those early rounds, or the upsets that occur in conference tournaments and the upsets that occur in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. It's 9 times out of 10, a team loses to another team that shoots the lights out from three-point range. This has to be a concern for LSU, as great as they've been playing. And look, they've won, what, 12 or 13 or 13 of the last 14 games. They're a top 25 team. They're immensely talented. But against the likes of playing Kentucky tomorrow night, and then Tennessee comes to town on the 23rd, and you're probably going to face either one of those two teams in the conference tournament, you can't be you have to give max effort when it comes to that transition defense. How concerned are you are that that could send the Tigers home early in the postseason, whether it's the conference tournament or the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think those are the two things that we've talked about with regards to just being inconsistent in general, and then particularly that aspect of allowing teams to have open looks and high percentage shots from the perimeter. Those are two things that worry you a lot when you get to March with this basketball team, because from a talent standpoint, when they're playing their best basketball, they look every bit the part of a team that can reach the second weekend and maybe threaten to get to that final weekend of the season. But those two shortcomings are exactly, as you mentioned, are things that you see teams that enter the NCAA tournament looking as talented as anyone. Those are the things that cost them in that first weekend, and suddenly such a promising season ends much earlier than anyone anticipated. So that's part of why, even when they win these games, Will Wade ends up being incredibly frustrated, because he wants to win the game in January, February, but he wants to play well, and he sees it as a bigger process, because he knows how talented the basketball team is, and he sees those shortcomings and what they could mean for them a month and a half from now.
We're on with Jarrett Rozier at TigerDetails.com. Jarrett, Javonte Smart, what's going on with the young man? He's immensely talented, but he seemingly has lost a bit of his mojo. What's going on with Javonte, and do you think that he can kind of play his way out of the little bit of the muck that he's in?
Yeah, I think as talented as he is, and we've talked about this from a bigger team perspective, I think that's something that happens for freshmen is they kind of go through some funks, and that's one of the biggest, steps forward of progress you see from a freshman to a sophomore often is just a greater consistency. And so we've seen some stretches from Javonte this season that he looks as good as anyone that they have on that roster, but he's still, trying to piece it together and have it be, a more consistent performance, particularly as the season progresses and we get later into the season. I'm really interested. This trip to Lexington this week that I've had kind of circled to myself, thinking it could be an interesting game to watch Javonte play in, because he was a guy that had some recruitment from Kentucky, at points during his high school career at Scotlandville, and people wondered if he was going to end up being that guy, that type of a prospect that ended up going to play basketball in Kentucky. And so I think it'll be an interesting
matchup for him, just because that has been a program that, that had been tied to him at different points. And you see some of those relationships sometimes when the opportunity is there to prove yourself on the court, it can turn into a special night.
Jarrett, you mentioned it. Let's talk a little bit about the matchup tomorrow night's game. Pre-game show can be heard right here live on 103.7 The Game at 5:30, tip at 6. Look, it's a great opportunity for LSU. Kentucky's going to be a top-five team. And look, this Kentucky team is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. They've had some growing pains. They usually do with John Calipari, right? His teams always go through growing pains. They never usually dominate from start to finish. They get better as the season progresses. What kind of challenges does this Kentucky team present to LSU coming in tomorrow night's game?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned they're not a perfect team, but they're pretty good. They have the one conference loss. They only have, I think, three losses still on the season overall, and they are in the top handful or so of SEC teams in most statistics across the board. They have their up and downs, as you mentioned they often do with Calipari, because it's so often such a freshman heavy team, and you just have to, as talented as you may be, it's the same thing we've talked about with LSU through the season, as talented as you may be, when you have a bunch of freshmen playing together for the first time, there are going to be some ups and downs. But for the Wildcats, as usual, it's been more ups and downs. I think two things that stand out to me, particularly when you look at that one game that they did lose in conference play early against Alabama, they got out-rebounded, and Alabama shot pretty well from the perimeter. And those are two areas that LSU has not always had success with throughout the course of the season, but in some instances, and particularly some instances in the last month and a half, they have shown really strong ability in both of those areas. And so I think you need, if you're the Tigers, to go up there and clear up some of the issues that we were talking about, and that effort has to be done on defense. You can't give a team that good open looks, but you have to continue to rebound the ball at a high level, which is something that more often than not they've had some success with of late. But they've got to be able to get themselves some good looks, not just in transition, but in half-court offense, too, for LSU. And if they can hit some shots, particularly from the perimeter, and really give themselves a chance for some good looks on offense, I think there's an opportunity there. We've seen lesser LSU teams give trouble to better Kentucky teams than this LSU team and this Kentucky team. So I'm interested to see how they go up to Rupp Arena and play up to those circumstances, because I think there are reasons to have some optimism, but they've got to play a more complete basketball game than they have of late.
Jarrett, this team very much so has played up to its competition. When they faced Alabama in the SEC opener, Alabama had just come off beating Kentucky, and they were up for that game. They played up to go on the road and defeat Ole Miss, who was ranked at the time. They do a very nice job of playing up to the competition, and we've talked about it, that they also have played down to the competition, whether that's been Arkansas twice or Missouri. Kentucky is tomorrow night, but then the week wraps up with a trip to Athens to take on a struggling Georgia team. Any concerns whatsoever that there'll be a letdown on the road in Athens this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they were disappointed enough with the way they played against Georgia in a win at the PMAC a couple of weeks ago that there will be a lot of fuel to avoid that sort of a performance on the road at Georgia in a few days. But when you look at the schedule right now and the fact that it comes after that trip to Kentucky, and this Georgia team has been one of the lesser teams in the SEC all season long, and there are other big games looming here next week, I think there's a lot of again fuel to avoid that sort of thing. But as up and down as this team has been anyway, and we've seen in some instances already this season where you hear the talk of how there is enough fuel to avoid a letdown, and then you see things get shaky, whether in a loss to Arkansas or just some close calls at Missouri or against Auburn. I have a really difficult time saying definitively that that's something they can avoid, just because they've been so up and down and had some of those shortcomings against some teams they should have performed better against.
Jarrett, we'll wrap it up with this. I have to ask you, and it has nothing to do with the LSU men's basketball team, so I hope you're prepared, brother.
Oh, goodness.
Dude, how did you feel yesterday that Cardi B became the first female rapper to win Best Rap Album at the Grammys?
Oh, man, I didn't even – I'm not up on anything that happened with the Grammys last
night. Did I just break news to you, dude? Did I just break that to you?
You did. You did. I wasn't locked into that. I was trying to get some recruiting stories done for the site to start the week.
So you were working. You were working. Oh, that's Roger. He's out there working. No, dude, Invasion of Privacy, man, won Best Rap Album of the Year. She becomes the first female rapper to take home that award. It not Lil Kim, not Nicki. It was Cardi B, man.
That's what's crazy to me. That's when I think back of some of the female rappers of years past. It's interesting to me that she's the first. And I mean, with all due respect to Cardi B too, because I enjoy her. I enjoy her. Her attitude and the attitude that she brings to the music, as well as just some of her interactions with media and social media. But that's good for her. That's crazy.
See, I just usually it's Jarrett Roger breaking news to us, giving us the inside, and I just so happened to return the favor. Brother, I appreciate you, man. I know you're swamped. You're always busy every time of the year, but I appreciate you making some time for us as always, my friend, and have a great week.
Yeah, man, you too. I'm glad it worked out and I was able to sneak in some time. And I appreciate you giving me that Cardi B news. That's going to make the rest of my day.
That's what I'm here for, brother. That's what I'm here for. That's Jarrett Roger, Tiger Details, one of the best. You know, my man is connected to what's going on with the hip-hop scene. So you know Jarrett was busy if he wasn't even aware that Cardi B won Best Rap Album of the Year. You know, you heard him in his life. He says, I didn't even know. I didn't even know. Broke the news. We'll wrap up this edition of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. You're home for the LSU Tigers. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios right here in Upper Lafayette. Want you to go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account, because we have the only poll that's going to be worth your time today, ladies and gentlemen. And it's about the Alliance, the American Alliance of Football. That's a mouthful. I'm just going to call it the Alliance, Cody. Cody, let the people know what the only Twitter poll question that's worth their time is right now up on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account.
It is there. We just want to know, plain and simple, which of these Alliance teams has the best name? We've got the Memphis Express up there for you to choose from, the Birmingham Iron.
Oh,
you can pick from them as well, or the Arizona Hotshots. And then we left that fourth choice there for you, just kind of other, if you want to write in, maybe you like one or the other. But the other names are kind of, there are, San Diego Fleet is okay.
It's okay.
The Atlanta Legends is a little self-glossing there. I don't know how I feel about that. You know?
Well, speaking like a true Saints fan who hates the ATL.
I mean, but it's like starting a franchise and calling yourself we're the Louisiana, our team is better than yours. Like, that's essentially, though, we're the Legends. Like, no, this league has nowhere to go. You can't build let's take a look at the Alliance of American Football Legends team. You can't do that because one of the team names is the Legends.
How great would have it been if they would have lost their first game 28-3?
I was hoping they would be, their team name would be the Atlanta 28-3s or like the Atlanta Blowouts or the Atlanta Choke Job, you know, anything, the Choke Artists even, you know, I mean,
I would have named them. You know what I would have named them? I would have just called themselves the Dirty Birds. I know this is the nickname for the Falcons.
That would have been
great.
But
how awesome would it have been? Just the Atlanta Dirty Birds.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been awesome.
I would have had more trouble picking on that than I do this.
And that would have just tapped into like the hip-hop culture of Atlanta. Right. And just you could have done. But hey,
they should have been the Beats. Just the Atlanta Beats.
Nice.
That'd have been pretty cool.
Or the Fighting Andre 3000.
Although Dr. Dre may have something to say about about them wanting to call themselves the Beats.
Yes. So make sure to go on to the 103.7 Game Twitter account.
Yeah, early return right now. The Birmingham Iron have got the lead with a 50% of the vote there. The Arizona Hotshots, 40%. And Memphis Express pulling up the rear there, 10% of the vote.
That's my team. I've affiliated. When I have some laying around money, as we talked about earlier in the show, I will get me some Memphis Express swag. You can count on that.
I just want a towel. I want one of those like rally towels that says Memphis Express. Is their mascot a choo-choo train?
No, it's a jet.
Oh, okay.
I think, yeah, it's a jet. I don't
that
think
makes sense.
That's a choo-choo train. Like we're at a daycare. Oh, here comes the choo-choo.
Oh, you've got kids. Get out of here.
Yeah, I know. I want to thank... I want to thank everyone for coming on the show today. Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details for coming on, breaking things down for us like they only can. I also want to thank Ralph and Bob for giving us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. It's greatly appreciated. Make sure to tune in tomorrow. Les East from Crescent City Sports will join us, talking more Pels talk. And up next, Jim Rome Show. After that, the Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg. And then the brother himself, Ben Love, will be on for the full 3 hours. 427. Keep it live and local here all day, guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.